Welcome to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Show, live from Ferd's Sports Bar and Grill, providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps to the pros in Champa Bay. Now, here's your host, Mike Rickard.
Wait, who said that? No, you were talking about the Celtics earlier, remember?
Oh, you did stick with the Tigers.
Yeah, I stuck with the Tigers.
You dumped the Pistons.
I mean,
let me tell you. If anybody like Bill Laimbeer ever heard about that, you'd be laid out like a...
Those guys would take a big issue. Isaiah Thomas, Joe D, all those guys would take beef with that.
See, you know all their names.
Yeah, of course.
It's your hometown, and you're not even a fan.
I've met Ben Wallace, Chauncey Billups. I mean, I've met those guys.
Did they come to the golf course?
No. I mean, just living in the area. Those guys are at the grocery store. I mean, you see those guys all the time, so...
Ben Wallace, that was a dandy. He's a unique cat.
I had the Big Ben fro and the headband as a kid.
You had the Big Ben fro?
Oh, my gosh. My mom wanted me to cut it so bad, but I couldn't do it. Even when he went to Chicago, I was like, I'm gonna rock the Big Ben all day. I was like maybe, what, 10 years old? I don't know.
And already a pain in your mom's rear end.
Exactly.
Hey, we're live at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill this second hour. We are going to have A.J. Smith and Barry Smith, and they're not related, believe it or not. There's AJ. Come on up, man. He's got a cold beverage here. Of course, Barry is not here. I know I got it. Another bodyguard. AJ, this is the Big O, Oscar Garner III. Have a seat, my man. We'll just converse here. Anyway, then we're going to be talking to. And this is a cool concept, and I'll let you chime in here for a minute.
Sure.
We've got this kid. This kid's coming down. Shaq Spikes is his name. And he wants to start a league. And AJ, you probably have an opinion on this. In the greater Tampa area, there's a lot of NBA guys that live down here. You know, you got the Kevin Knoxes of the world that come home off season. And a lot of cities have their own, I'd just say, like fraternity of guys that play. Might be college guys, might be going on. They might be G League guys. Who knows? That doesn't exist in this area from a consistency perspective. He went to Gibbs High. He played at University of Charlotte. He wants to start that, and he started naming. There's about nine guys right now, and I don't have them off the top of my head, that are on NBA rosters that live in the area. You know, you hear about MLB and NFL guys all the time, but you don't hear about NBA guys. So he wants to create this. He thinks there'd be fan appeal. You know, there's city parks where they congregate, although in New York City, Chicago,
right.
L.A., Venice Beach. And he wants to get that kind of climate. Being the NBA insider that you are, your perspective.
You know, I think that's huge. The one thing that I've loved always about basketball is the community, is the fact that we've always had a connection with other sports. It's kind of hard to get to know who's around, but when you're hooping, you don't have the gear on, you don't have a helmet on. So it's good to connect with the community, get everybody together in one spot. And with the thing about baseball that people aren't noticing, I mean, but basketball that people aren't noticing, is that it's not just about the leagues anymore. There's so much being built around the sport. Like, the NBA is a year-long thing now.
Every sport
is. Well, you know, with social media and the internet, of course. But there's so much being built around the sport. We now need people on the ground level making sure that we're making the right connections and that the sport isn't going to get lost in the TV, lost in the social media and everything. We're still keeping the culture.
Well, I think it's going to be a heck of an idea, and hopefully this young man can get it up and running. Well, AJ, I'd like to know what Barry hangs over your head. That you took a Saturday afternoon to come down and join me, man, and I certainly appreciate it. And wait till you see this bio. I texted him this morning. I said, send me a little information on AJ, would you, so that I, you know. I don't sound like, you know, worse than I typically.
PG version, not anything explicit. Cause he's got some long on me, so.
Well, I know that you went to Jesuit.
I did. I love that hat.
I've been blessed through several people to have. There you go, Coach. To have several of the teams over. I had the state championship football team over.
Yeah, nice.
And then I had the state wrestling team down, champions, about 3 weeks ago. And I went to a private Catholic school, so I really enjoyed the rich tradition that Jesuit is, and you know, you went there, you've experienced it. It's hard to believe they hadn't had a state championship since 1968. I think you guys made it to the semis your senior year, right?
We made it to semis our junior year. Honestly, we should have won. We probably had 16, 17 guys on that team that went to play, you know, D1, high-level FCS football, and we ran into a triple option team in the state semifinals up in Rockledge, and, you know, first time you see it all year, you know, it's shouldn't have lost that game, so, but...
How ironic is that, and then you end up going to Georgia Tech?
Yeah, well, I didn't sign up for it. You know, my last year we had a coaching change at Georgia Tech. And
is that when Johnson came?
That's when Johnson came in. So, I mean, it's much different today than, you know, it is back then because, you know, going into my senior year, you know, you had to, if you wanted to transfer, you had to go down a level or you couldn't, you know, transfer, you know, to another D1 school. So it's much different today. I mean, if somebody's not starting today, you know, they can decide, hey, I want to hop in the portal, go somewhere else, not to sit out a year. So
what's your opinion of that?
Every situation is different, right? And everybody's got a different situation. I mean, I think the players that are upset about playing time and, you know, issues like that, I think they should stick it out longer, really. I mean, I think you should work for, like, what you're going to, like, ultimately achieve and play for. When you go to a school at Georgia Tech, you're signing up for more than just playing football. You're signing up to go to a world-class institution and get a high-level degree that's going to set you up for the rest of your life. And so, you know, I think you got to think big picture. And I think, you know, some kids, you know, probably don't have the, I don't know, maybe, like, the right support structure that are, like, really, like, influencing, like, what they should do and they should stick it out. Now, I can understand if, you know, you go and you sign up for a school and then the coach leaves after, like, you know, the first year or even after you sign, like, I think you should be able to reopen yourself up and go out and really choose, like, where you want to go again. I think every situation is complicated, but, you know, I think, you know, each student athlete should really have a good support structure, and that'll help educate, like, on, hey, like, once you go into the portal, you know, it's, you know, there's no guarantees. So, you know, you see good success stories. You see every, like, Spencer Rattler that, you know, leaves Oklahoma and ends up with South Carolina. But then you see a lot of kids that, you know, leave a D1 school, they end up going down to, you know, Furman or FCS. No shot on Furman, but, like, you know, go lower level schools. So,
well, I went to Western, you know, Kentucky, and they've been a recipient.
The Hilltoppers, yeah. So.
Okay, this is for a little humor.
Yeah.
Well, it's not humor. I mean, it's fact. Like,
yeah.
But I thought he was just going to give me a couple snippets.
Oh, Lord.
I got this at about 8-something this morning. Your parents are FSU grads.
They are.
They're fraternity and sorority people.
They are.
I already talked about Jesuit, and you played football. I already knew of these. But
yeah.
I like his attention to detail because I certainly don't have it. And I didn't know Dominic Chow was the coach. He's at Berkeley Prep now, right?
Sio. So Sio was our coach through our junior year. And really, it's a crazy story. So, you know, we go through spring practice, heading, you know, senior year spring practice, and we go through all summer workouts, and then, you know, really 2 weeks before the season starts, we have a team meeting, and Sio resigns. And he resigned that close to the start of the season because our longtime assistant coach, Bob Wiener, you know, was almost going to, like, hand him, like, the reins, kind of like what Bruce Arians just did to Todd Bowles.
Todd Bowles?
Yeah, very, very similar situation. However, the priest at Jesuit at the time said, well, we're just not going to hand the job to Coach Wiener. We're going to open up and do a national search. So they ended up doing a national search in 2 weeks and hiring a former head coach at Austin Peay, Bill Schmitz. And so Bob Wiener, of course, you know, very famous in Tampa Bay circles now because he ended up going coaching baseball for a year once he didn't get the Jesuit job and at Crystal River. And then a year later, Plant High School hires Bob to be the, you know, head coach of Plant. Goes on, wins numerous state championships at Plant High School.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, absolutely. And now he's the QB coach at Toledo. So it's, it was a crazy time for sure. So,
well, Dominic, I got a unique story there.
Yeah.
His college roommate at Loras College in Iowa. That's where he went to college. Dominic did. And his college roommate, I found this out to my buddy I graduated from. He goes,
yeah.
Have you run into Dominic yet? Have you got him on your show? I go, well, not really. I'm just getting immersed in it. And he says, oh, I'll call him for you. I go,
yeah.
What the hell are you going to call him for? You live in Oregon, and we're from Iowa. Oh, yeah, didn't you know that Bill Bill Burrows, you know my brother? I go, yeah. They're roommates in Loras, Iowa. Okay, so let's go on. Okay.
It's funny because Dominic, you know, he's the main reason why I went to Jesuit. You know, my godmother. So my mom's sorority sister, Karen Vaughn, was married to Dominic. And, you know, when I was in middle school, you know, Dominic's obviously the legendary head coach of Jesuit. And so, you know, Karen's telling my mother, like, you know, AJ really is considered Jesuit. And we're living out in, you know, Brandon, Valrico area. And, you know, I was slated to go to Durant. And so, you know, finally they convinced me to take this test to get into Jesuit. I take it, get in. I'm probably the only kid from Valrico that, you know, gets into Jesuit and actually comes in here. And so it was a different world, but it was all because of Coach Saya. And it was the best thing that ever happened, so.
Well, programs like that are rich in tradition.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
And I think that's the cool thing about it. You know, generational.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The Catholic high school I went to, my dad went there.
Oh, yeah.
I went there.
Oh, yeah.
My sons won state championships. It was just in our blood.
Oh, yeah.
And if you stay in the area and your son, you know, you have sons and they go there.
The alumni, just the connections and the network that you have going to.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So you were a defensive lineman in high school, and then when you went to play for Yellow Jackets.
Well, I was recruited as a defensive end, you know, even into college.
But you played offensive line?
I did. So, my entire first semester, I'm being redshirted. I was coined as a number two pencil, you know, when I got to, you know, being recruited. I was 6'6", 225 my senior year. And so, obviously, you get to college, like, you almost had, like, a redshirt year to put on weight and get stronger and all that good stuff. And
starch up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I was holding my own, but, you know, we get the bowl practice, and usually when Coach Gailey, you know, he was our head coach at Georgia Tech, he called me, you know, after practice to break it down, and, you know, he says some names of people he needs to see after practice. And it's usually people that are going to be interviewed by the press. And he said my name to stay behind. I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, God, like, what did I do wrong? Because I knew I wasn't being interviewed or anything. And so he pulls me aside. He goes, hey, AJ, like, you know, how's everything going? How are you enjoying Tech? Love it. Doing great. He goes, hey, well, I want you to consider something. And I go, what's that, coach? He goes, well, you know, I think you could be a good defensive end for Georgia Tech. Or I think you can be a great offensive lineman. You know, I want you to, you know, switch to offensive tackle. How's that sound? And I go, oh, coach, well, I wasn't expecting to have this conversation right now. He goes, well, go home, talk to your parents about it. And, you know, if you're not in agreement with it, then, you know, I'll grant you a transfer. I'm thinking to myself, like, holy, you know what?
Yeah.
Like, you know, first semester at
holy hell,
college,
what's going on,
you know,
here, man?
Yeah, and so, honestly, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, came back next day, told Coach Gailey, yep, let's do it. And I'd never played offensive line in my life. And I was blessed because my offensive line coach at the time, Joe D'Alessandris, Joe is actually, you know, one of the best offensive line coaches in the entire world. He's the head offensive line coach for the Baltimore Ravens right now. And a funny story behind that here in a second, but, you know, Joe was kind of like a second father to me and a mentor and just a father figure. And, you know, sure enough, you know, the next 2 years after that, you know, spent eating right, putting on weight, getting stronger, and then lo and behold, you know, my junior year, you know, I'm starting at offensive tackle. So everything worked out, you know, the right way there. And then you know, you go into your senior year, and it's funny because we had a coaching change going to triple option with Paul Johnson.
Yeah, you went from Chan.
And so everything I had learned, you know, for those 3 years to be like an offensive tackle in a pro style system.
And you guys were a passing. I mean,
yeah,
for Christ's sake, you had Calvin Johnson on your team.
You know, we underachieved big time at Tech. You know, we had a lot of high level talent. We should have, you know.
Well, God rest his soul. You had Demaryius Thomas.
Baby. Yeah.
And,
yeah, baby.
Just
yeah.
So sad. And then and Calvin Johnson. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
Arguably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, wide receivers.
Better people than they are players, I'll tell you that. So, but, you know, it was crazy because you go in and now you're switching and you've got a big playbook and, you know, Johnson comes in and, you know, Coach Johnson's a great coach in his own way. But, you know, he had a very small playbook, 40, 50 plays. And, you know, I go from being, you know, at that point I'm now 6'7", you know, 315, 320. They're saying, like, hey, like, and we you cut down to like 290. I'm like, oh my God, like here we go. We're going to move you into guard and we're going to pull you about 30, 40 plays a game.
Because like, oh, you're running that option, man.
Yeah, it was absolutely crazy. But, you know, the sad part about that was, you know, with coaching changes, you have coaches come and go. And I'll never forget that bowl practice, you know, Gailey had been fired. Our interim coach was Tenuta, who was a defense coordinator. Anyways, but you know, all these, you know, Gailey coaches are having their interviews with, you know, Johnson, and you know, Coach D comes in and, you know, is really like, you know, almost in tears, like in that, you know, offense line room, saying, "Hey guys, just want to let you know I'm not gonna be your coach next year." You know, Coach Johnson's made a decision that, you know, I can't coach option football, and he's gonna go a different direction. We were heartbroken.
This is a guy you've been with for 3 years.
Yeah, 4 years.
You trusted.
You know, yeah, you know, just absolutely heartbroken. The funny thing is now is, you know, he's the head offensive line coach for the Baltimore Ravens. If you look at...
If anything is more fitting.
Anything is more fitting. And the schemes that the Ravens run, they're all option-based for Lamar. And, you know, and it's even funnier because John Harbaugh brought Johnson in to do some, like, you know, scheme stuff too. But it just goes to show you know, like, anybody can adapt. Anybody can move into each role. You know, all you got to do is learn and coach. And ultimately, like, yeah, that was a huge loss for Tech, losing Coach D. But he's still a great friend to this day. But
well, I know several University of Iowa linemen that played for the Ravens that absolutely love him.
Yeah,
I've
had conversations. What's that?
I said Iowa's lineman university. I mean,
well, God, somebody appreciates it.
Yeah.
Justin Wirfs right now,
Big Ten guy. I mean,
playing for the Bucks.
But I got a question. So, for those, football is the sport that I'm least, when it comes to scheme and the technicals of it, that I know the least about. I was a baseball, basketball player growing up. They told you're the number two pencil. They said trim down. We're going to put you to guard to run the option.
Yeah.
What was the main purpose you were to serve there? Because as somebody who, like, I watch football.
Right.
Lamar's one of my favorite players. But, like,
the
scheme part of it, the planning part of it, what was the plan in that, having you do that?
So, you know, at that point, they were just kind of looking, like, you know, trying to fit, you know, X's and O's, you know, maybe a round peg in a square hole. And, you know, a guy my size was not a traditional option lineman that they would recruit. And so they're saying, okay, hey, like, we got to be competitive this year. Like, you know, where we put AJ? Like, where is his skill set, like, you know, most adapt to? And so traditionally in the option offense, you know, the spread triple, not the NFL, what the Ravens were running.
We ran the bone when I was.
You've got bigger guys inside. And so for me, I was a big guy and I could move. I was really athletic. And really the biggest difference is in technique because, you know, in pro style offenses is, you know, you've got a foot to a foot and a half split. In the triple option, you've got 3 feet splits. And your stance, you're in a very balanced stance in a pro style offense. Like, you know, if I got down my stance right now, you could swipe my hand out and I'd still be squatting.
Right, okay.
In the triple option, you've got 80% of your weight forward, so you're almost in a sprint technique, right? And so the whole offense is predicated on going straight, getting movement. If a guy moves, as long as you get something on him, you're going forward, right? And so it's completely different. And, you know, a lot of the scheme doesn't translate, you know, to the NFL. You know, the biggest success story by far is Shaq Mason, who the Bucks just traded for. Shaq was one of the best offensive linemen that, you know, realistically college football the past 10 years. He's the reason why Georgia Tech won the Orange Bowl in 2014. If you go watch the film of him as an option guard playing against Mississippi State and moving the Chris Joneses of the world and those guys who are NFL stars to this day, I mean, he made his name on the tape, and the Patriots have got a long time, just amazing offensive line coach. I forgot what his name was, but he took that tape and said, hey, like, this guy right here, I'm going to coach him up because he's got the flexibility, he's got all this.
Mobility.
Yep. And he's strong as a freaking ox. And look at him now, all pro, you know, Bucks just traded for him.
That was a great move, by the way, don't you think?
Amazing move, because you just don't replace the Ali Marpet, but to get him for like a fifth round pick, what we got for him, was absolutely like huge. So
yeah, now I'm hyped. I didn't know to be hyped for that, but now I'm hyped.
No, I'm telling you, like, you watch him in the run game, Shaq Mason. Yeah, you watch him in the run game this year. I mean, he moves people. Like, it's hard to get movement on, you know, college players, let alone NFL players. But, you know, you get him one-on-one, you don't need as many double teams, and he gets up to the second level into a linebacker, good night, man. It's pretty watch.
You're listening to Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. We're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill having a nice conversation with A.J. Smith, former Jesuit Tiger. That still astounds me. I'll tell you why in a minute. And then, of course, Georgia Tech alum. I will bring up one little Iowa tidbit. I think you were on that team when you guys played in the Orange Bowl.
No, that was the year after.
Was Andrew on that team?
No, No.
Neither one of you were.
We escaped that kamikaze.
Well, it was a kamikaze because I went to the game and
I was freezing my ass. I was in the stands.
I was going to say, that's why we beat you guys. Yeah. It was the cold factor. And Barry and a handful of guys have told me, you know, they grew up here. Yeah. That's the coldest they've ever been.
It's crazy.
Barry's from Miami. He said that's the coldest it was.
I think that was like the coldest day ever on that day.
It was
like,
the Orange Bowl for you. It was the Orange Bowl.
But you know what the crazy thing was? Is you had all these Iowa fans there with their shirts off and everything. Like, oh, this is great. This is a balmy day. And I'm sitting here like,
oh, yeah. Well, we're a little touched anyway. But, they starting tailback. He was a freshman. He played my son's state championship team. So we went down, and Brandon Wager ran for like a $1.60 against you guys.
Oh, yeah.
In the Orange Bowl. And we were like, this is Georgia Tech. I thought they had southern speed. And here we come, you know, big lumberers from up north. I didn't like that game on paper at all. And
I'll tell you who won that game for you. It was Adrian Claiborne, defensive end.
Oh, without it. And he's still in the league.
He played the option so well. He crashed so hard. I mean, he made life hell. I mean, a lot of times you leave the defensive end unblocked on the backside, and he would come down so fast and crash. I mean, he was wrecking everything that day. So.
All right, now. Barry's even provided me with some tidbits on some of your favorite memories.
And he
thinks that the in 2008 Georgia Tech game.
Oh wow, yeah.
That'd be one of your favorite memories.
Absolutely.
Share that with the audience.
Yeah, I mean we were. This Georgia team, you know, was preseason number one. Matthew Stafford, AJ Green.
That was Stafford's team.
Oh yeah,
no, he's done all right.
Preseason number one in the country. They had a couple losses that year, but still, you know, it's a top 20 match. We were both like top 20 teams. I think we were both around like 15, give or take a few spots going to that game. And I mean, we got down big at halftime. I mean, it was a noon game. We got down big at halftime in Athens. I think we're down 28-12 at halftime. And you know, really, Johnson comes in the locker room and he goes, "Hey, like, you know, we're gonna make a couple adjustments. We're gonna go out. And we're gonna score in the first series." So literally just like switch blocking with the A-back, which was kind of like more of a slot receiver and the triple option, the wide receiver doing. And we started switch blocking. And, you know, Georgia players aren't that bright, so that they couldn't like catch on that fast.
A little bit of rivalry there?
Well, yeah, it's called clean old-fashioned hate. But there's nothing
boy,
clean.
Am I familiar with that.
Michigan State?
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, they're not very bright out there. And so... You know, it took them a while to catch on what we were doing. Sure enough, we go down, and you know, Jonathan Dwyer breaks a long run for a touchdown. Before you know it, you know, it's hell's bells, and you know, I think we get up like now we're up. It before you know it, I think we dropped 21 some points in the third quarter unanswered. We're up 35-28. I think we ended up winning like 38-35. But it was an amazing game.
Hell of a game.
Is that off the adjustments?
And
that was at Georgia.
That was at Georgia. And, I mean, that was the first time we had won. And I think the last time we won, it was Chisholm won. And so it had been about 7 years since we won and beat those guys. But the funniest thing was, it's like, you know, you get done, you win. They got those hedges around the field. And it's like, suppose like, there's something special about their hedges, but let me tell you, like every SEC stadium has got hedges around their field.
It is unique.
Yeah, but most SEC schools have it, so like
it wouldn't survive in the Big Ten,
like between the hedges, whatever. So, anyways, we're out there, we're pulling up their hedges, and we got the hedges in the mouth. And
are you kidding?
I swear. And so you know, you got the GBIs there, Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and they're all saying like, if you guys don't stop pulling up the hedges, we're gonna arrest you. We all look at them, we're like. We started pulling them out.
Quit eating our greens.
Yeah, so
don't they feed you Georgia Tech?
Yeah, so Barry's son Tweer and I, we've got a lot of pictures together with hedges in our mouths, and that was a great season. You know, I'll tell you this: you know, when Johnson first came in, and like I said, we didn't have the options that you know players have this day, where you can transfer and you know kind of go wherever you want. You know, you basically had to buy in, and he basically said this. He called a meeting with the seniors and said, "Hey. Only seniors here because if you guys buy in to like what we're going to do, I just want you to give us a chance. Give us a chance. It's completely different. Buy in. But if you guys buy in, the juniors will buy in. The juniors buy in. Sophomores buy in. Sophomores buy in.
Domino effect.
Yeah, domino effect. So you know what? we all had like 12 hours of classes left to go. We're not going to sacrifice a Georgia Tech degree. One in six tech grads are millionaires. We're not going to sacrifice that. And so we bought in. And
say that stat again.
I think it's lower now. I think it's one in every four. But when we were in college, one in every six tech graduates are millionaires.
Holy hell.
Yeah, I think it's one in four. That's my recruiting pitch to all the Tampa Bay area athletes.
If you had put that on the recruiting I would have hung up the Michigan State jersey along.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they put that on like everything now. They need to broadcast more. I think it's one in four now.
That's
but
crazy.
So we all bought in and nobody left. And, you know, it's one of those things where that year we beat. I don't think a tech team has ever done this or will ever do it again, but that year we beat Clemson, we beat FSU, we beat Miami, we beat Georgia. I mean, like,
wow.
Look at those teams we beat that year. Then, you know, we turn around, you know, we lost some games we shouldn't have lost to, but...
Those are bragging rights for a lifetime right there, my friend.
I mean, it's a pretty special year, so...
Especially living in the state of Florida. Nice to knock off FSU in Miami.
Well, you know, that was my senior day game. You know, that was funny because, because of ACC realignment, I grew up, both my parents were in FSU, and so I mean, I grew up being a Seminole, just like, you know, Andrew did being a...
Yeah, with his pops.
Right,
yep.
And so it was funny because, like, FSU during the recruiting process sent back my, like, highlight film, and, like, John Lilly, recruiting coordinator, was like, unfortunately, AJ, you don't meet the specifications or, like, you know, quality of an FSU defensive end. And that chip on the shoulder was there for a lifetime, I'll tell you in a second. But because ACC realignment, you know, we didn't play FSU until my senior year because, you know, that you brought in the Miami, Virginia Tech, Boston College back in 2004, and so they started shifting gears, whereas Tech and FSU's play every year, but not then. So we didn't play them until our senior year. It was our senior day game, and so, you know, my parents are on the field with me, like, and they've got tech stuff on, and like...
And it's an emotional day
It's emotional stuff, and, you know, it's the ABC intro or whatever, so you got my parents on national TV, and, like, my dad, mom, buddies are texting, like, I can't believe you're wearing tech stuff, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's pretty funny, but...
Great memories, actually.
Yeah, it's great memory. We beat them. It was a last-second, play where Marcus Sims fumbled on the goal line. We recovered. It was... We won, and, you know, John Lilly was still the, you know, tight end coach or recruiting coordinator at the time, I think, for FSU, and so... Yeah, he was the first coach I went and found on the field after the game. And I said, I went straight up to him. I go, you know, I'm really glad I didn't meet the qualification of FSU defense, man.
You touched on something there, that chip on the shoulder. Yeah. That's one thing that's kept me going a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
For any young athletes, or really somebody young and aspiring, talk about the chip on the shoulder, carrying that. I mean, how many times in the gym did you hear that as you were pressing weight? Talk about that.
Absolutely. You know, I tell people all the time, what's your why? Right? What are you doing for it? What's your why? And I think a chip on the shoulder is part of it, right? Because, like, you know, there's some type of motivation that drives you to be great. Like, what's Tom Brady's why right now at age 45 coming back? His why, most likely, we don't know him, but is most likely like, hey, like, I'm still competitive. I'm the greatest. I want to continue to be better. I want to get better. I want to win an 8th championship. I think that's his why. I think the why is like, hey, I want an 8th championship, and I still feel like I can be the best. My why was like, hey, like, you know, I ultimately, like, want to put myself in position to be an NFL player, and I want to get an amazing college degree, set myself up for a lifetime. So that's what drove me through college.
Be one of those one out of four.
Yeah, one out of six at a time, you know, and one out of four now. But, but you get those, you know, like, when it gets tough, because, you know, like, you know, being a student athlete's not easy. I mean, they talk about a 20-hour rule. You know, where back in the day you had 20 hours that were devoted to football activities. Yeah, right.
Not anymore.
Yeah, right. It was more like 40 hours a week, right? But you're working a full-time job.
Yeah.
And when you're not working and when you're not devoting time to your craft, you know, you've got school. And Georgia Tech is, let me tell you, like, this is no, like, you know, plug for GT, but, you know, when you talk,
sure it is.
When you talk to a Tech alumni, you don't ask them when you graduated. You ask them, when did you get out? Okay, because it's that tough to get out, to graduate. My freshman year, you know, we've got this, you know, probably 200-person, you know, international affairs class, and the professor looks, all right, look in each row. There's probably, you know, 10 people in each row. You know, by the time you graduate, you know, seven people in each row will no longer be with Georgia Tech. because that's just how tough it is to get through there.
What did you graduate with? What was your degree?
So I was College of Management, which is now the business school. And, you know, it was known as the M-Train back then because that's what most of the student-athletes were on. But it's a top 25 business school in the entire country where all the engineering
business, business and communications, economics tends to be what a lot of athletes gravitate towards, for sure.
Unless you're at Georgia and you're in
P.E.
You're in physical ed or agriculture. Or
under, like, underwater basket weaving or something.
I think they've got a grass management school. I hear it's really good.
You're brutal. I can't believe that you, after that game, you went up to the FSU recruiter. That I give you kudos to, brother. That's a great story.
Yeah, well, it probably wasn't the most professional thing to do. And I, you know,
who cares?
But
at that age, you're 22. Now
yeah,
I have.
It was a chip on the shoulder type deal, and you know, it felt good, and you know, the emotion of it. But to his point, you know, it drives you. It's just like when somebody tells you like you're not good enough, you can't do it. You know, you look at cases all the day. I mean, like we've got the NFL draft coming up, you know, in a couple weeks, and you know, you've got all these guys that are slotted for the first round. But you'll see so many players get drafted in later rounds that really make their marks. You'll see so many undrafted guys that have got a chip on their shoulder.
Chip.
Like, hey,
yep.
They didn't want me. I wasn't good enough, you know. And then that's going to.
And they remind them that at signing time for the next after their rookie contract is over.
Absolutely,
without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to ask you this: after that win in Athens, did you guys call the Atlanta Police Department and tell them you guys were coming back home?
No, they already knew what was going on.
I was about to joke around. I'm like, I bet you guys came home to a very sleepy, very tired,
I bet
quiet
that.
Atlanta downtown area.
No, you know, we had some
rocked the house.
We had some really big wins on the road that we come home to Notre Dame, Clemson, name it.
You got my Irish.
My first ever start in college football was at Notre Dame in 2007.
Isn't that a great venue, though?
That's crazy.
Historic?
Yeah, opening day, national TV. Funny story. So we first ever start in college football. I mean, I'd played, you know, special teams, field goal unit, you know, the previous couple years as I was getting ready to play. And it had some garbage time. But, you know, really, like, as a starter, my first ever start in college football. And so, you know, we received the ball. Like most NBC, you know, goes straight to timeout, right? And so we're on the field as an offense unit, right, waiting for the TV timeout to be over, and they're doing the Allentown scoreboard. And the largest cheer of the day was during that Allentown scoreboard in Notre Dame Stadium. They do final in Ann Arbor, Appalachian State, you know, 41, Michigan, 39.
Right.
The place went crazy, right?
That day, it was that day.
Was the loudest cheer of the entire day. We killed Notre Dame. We beat them 33-3.
You did?
Oh, yeah. We.
Who was our coach then?
Your coach.
Diehard Catholic. I've had family go there. My uncles went there. I'm a Notre Dame nut.
It was still Weiss. It was Weiss. And
Charlie got pounded home.
It was a year after Brady Quinn and Samardzija. Those guys had just graduated. We should have beat them the previous year. Same thing. We opened the previous year in Atlanta against Notre Dame, and we got screwed by a late hit. It was funny because I was just.
That was a nice team Notre Dame had.
Oh, that was a battle that day in 06. It's funny because I just got back last weekend from Tortuga Music Festival. About 5 years ago, we're at Tortuga Music Festival, and my brother and I, we run into Brady Quinn. Brady's one of the nicest guys.
You know Cameron Wembley? Have you met Cameron?
I've met him before.
Yeah, Cameron was on the Browns with him, with Brady.
Brady's one of the nicest guys. You know, we're just having a conversation. And so that game was really controversial in 2006 because it's a third and long, and we get him out of bounds, and we still have the lead. And we're up 10-7. In the fourth quarter, and literally he is still in bounds, and Phil Wheeler, who played in the NFL for about, you know, 8-10 years, hits him in bounds to knock him out. The ref throws a flag and said like it was an outbounds hit. 15-yard penalty, you know, they get, you know, automatic first down, they run in, touchdown, they win the game. And so I got Brady right there. I was like, hey, like, listen, between me and you, like, you were in bounds. He goes, No, I was definitely out of bounds. We'll have a couple more drinks. I was definitely in bounds.
He told you that?
He heard it here. He told my brother and I that. It was funny. But great guy, man. He was really.
That's what I've heard. In fact, Cameron's going to effort him now that he works with CBS, and I'll get him on the show sometime.
Yeah.
I got to ask you about Calvin Johnson. And there's probably too many to recall, but give me a memory of when you were just astounded that this is an exceptional athlete. A game, a catch, an instance where you thought, this guy's here and the rest of the world's down here.
Yeah, I mean, it was fall camp. And you know, it's like anything. You know, when you're being recruited, you know, you check out what your recruiting class is, and you come in on different weekends, and you know, but you don't meet all the recruits in your class. But you know, you had this, you know, 5-star, you know, talent, you know, from Georgia, and you know, you think being from Florida, like, hey, like, you know, we're the best, and you know, you see a lot of top talent. There's so much talent in the Tampa area, but you know, you get to fall camp, and you know, Calvin's out there with the ones, and he's going against Reuben Houston and Kenny Scott, you know, our two top cornerbacks, and you know, they're both, you know, Reuben's upperclassmen, and you know, Calvin, you know, Reggie Ball's our quarterback, and you know, it must have been the first day of full pads, and Calvin, you know, full team scrimmage, and Reggie keeps going to Calvin, and I mean, it's like, you know, hitch route, you know, post route, go route. I mean,
that post was ridiculous.
Oh, I mean, and Calvin is just, you know, just, and it's not because Reuben was bad. It was just that, you know, as a true freshman, Calvin was so superior in everything he was doing that, you know, Reuben just couldn't match up. And Reuben was a great corner. And at that point, you know, you got the defense, you know, you got everybody talking trash back and forth. Right. But you're like, holy cow, this guy's special. You know, second game of that year, we opened up like at Samford, and you know, we won, and we go on the road at Clemson, night game, national TV, and you know, we got down, but you know, Calvin had scored 2 touchdowns, gets back into the game, and then Clemson muffs a punt, and all they had to do was literally punt the ball. They muffed the punt, like the bad snap, the, you know, punter falls on it, 10-yard line, and you know, sure enough, we got like 2 plays to score with like 10 seconds left. First play, you know, Reggie throws a fade to Calvin, you know, mosses, I think it was, you know, Ty Miller, NFL player, ends up that game, 3 touchdowns, and like, you know, the Georgia Tech broadcaster, Wes Durham, goes, you know, his famous call was, you know, legend is born in Calvin Johnson, you know, so his second or third game ever, you know, basically beats Clemson. But I say this, all, you know, most times when people find out I went to Georgia Tech, and you know, when I played there, they go, oh, you played with Calvin. Yes, I did. Like, you know, he's one of my really good friends still to this day. I tell people all the time, he's a better person than he is a player. And you know, the guy that you met as a true freshman, he's still that same guy. You know, the Megatron, and you know, just all the hoopla, and the, you know, that doesn't matter to him. I mean, he's such a great guy. And
what's he doing now?
So
whatever he wants.
No, Calvin obviously retired early from the NFL, and you know, it's and he wants to help athletes. He wants to, you know, mind, body, soul. You know, Calvin has invested heavily in cannabis, and he's got, you know, a new company called the Primitive Group that him and one of his former teammates, Rob Sims, have started in Michigan. He's got one of the only, like, marijuana grow licenses in the state, and so, you know, he's launched this big company with marijuana, and you know, for a lot of people, it's very controversial, but, you know, he's really done a deep dive into the positive effects that marijuana will have on the body and the athlete, and like really helping educate on that front. So he's full in on that, and he's got his Calvin Johnson Jr. Foundation, you know geared towards generating scholarships for, you know, high school athletes, you know, to go to colleges that they want. His mother, Arica, is a pancreatic cancer survivor, and so the foundation also goes to pancreatic cancer awareness. He's got a gala every summer that's dedicated to that. So he's still very involved. He's just a special human. So,
all right, here's a question. What are you doing these days? That's the only thing that Barry, in this lengthy bio, did not share with me.
So I was one of the 98% that didn't go pro on the field. I went pro, in sport business. And so I work for the Aspire Sport Marketing Group, global sport marketing firm. I oversee all of our client development. We partner with colleges and pro teams to do revenue generation. And so whether that's ticket sales, sponsorships, marketing, data insights, you know, we're forming partnerships with these institutions, with these teams to help them drive revenue. And so a really good example here in market is University of South Florida. We've been in partnership with USF since 2016. We've got a team of 7 on site that, you know, all they do each day is sell tickets for USF, generate revenue, donations for the Bulls Club, and help create a great home field advantage. The look and feel is that they're USF athletic employees. Their paycheck comes from Aspire, though, and so they're physically located on site at the Leroy Selman Center. So,
you do this nationwide?
We do this nationwide. We got 40 colleges across the country, from the biggest Power Fives to Kansas's.
So you're kind of the IMG of the college world, then.
We don't say IMG.
That's a bad word.
Well, they don't exist anymore. They've been bought so many times. They're now Learfield.
They are Learfield now, aren't they?
They are, absolutely.
I used to buy a lot of airtime from
Learfield.
We're really
specific in our niche, in terms of what we do. We don't want to be a Tiger Woods agent like an IMG wanted to be. We don't want to do everything they want to do. We want to be really specific and intentional in our focus and revenue generation. So my job is I go out and my job is to get new colleges and new pro teams on board and speak to athletic directors, team presidents, and go from there. So
I got to ask this question too: who was the toughest you ever went up against in your career?
Oh boy, two people come to mind: BJ Raji, defensive tackle from Boston College. He was probably as wide as this table and played this low to the ground. It was like a tree stump and strong as an ox. And so for a guy like me that's, almost 6'8", to get that low, it was really tough. And the other guy that comes to mind is Chris Long, played at UVA. Chris Long, longtime NFL.
Howie's boy?
Yeah, I was flying because there were some comments during the game about Howie's boy.
What kind of comment?
Oh, man.
Were they coming out of your mouth?
Well, no, because I...
You weren't talking smack to him?
Talking trash during the game is really tiring. And, it takes you off focusing on, what you're doing. So I let everybody else talk trash. I was just like, listen, I'm already, winded,
I got to focus here, boys.
I'm trying to focus on the next play.
Right? I'm going to be talking trash.
But, he was relentless. He had his motor was absolutely crazy.
Just like the old man's.
Seriously, I'm telling you, he played a five tech. He was a two gapper. He had great technique. He was strong as an ox too. And so, there was one play where, literally, I blocked him down the ground. I thought the play was over, but it wasn't. He gets up, runs 30 yards down the field, makes a tackle. I'm like, oh god, I'm gonna hear about this.
I bet you love that in the film session.
Yeah.
They pointed that out. And those are the ones where you have to go to the bathroom because it's coming up.
Oh man, it's coming now. There was no going to the bathroom in Coach D. You were locked in that room for a solid 45 minutes watching the film. But you knew it was coming. So
you and Andrew, obviously, Barry said that there's some epic stories we can't discuss air.
Like I said, you got to keep it PG, right? So.
But you guys met at Jesuit. Is that where your friendship started?
Yeah, we did.
You went to Georgia Tech together.
Crazy, right? So, we came in as freshmen at Jesuit together, and obviously he's Andrew Smith. I'm AJ Smith, and so we're.
Your parents named you the same.
Yeah, and so obviously the parents make the connections. We know each other from the FSU days. And funny story, our transcripts actually got messed up heading into Jesuit, and Jesuit confused my transcripts coming out of middle school with Andrew's, and Andrew had to actually do summer school going into Jesuit, which it should have been me having to do summer school.
Seriously?
Oh, I swear, yeah. funny story.
He'd be buying cocktails the rest of our friendship in that case.
Oh man, so it's pretty.
What do you call that? Reparations, when you go back and collect when you've been done wrong back in the past.
I think
he's got reparations on you, brother.
Yeah, it's all good. I've gotten him out of trouble a few times, but we won't go into that. But it's funny, it's not funny, but Andrew, he tore his ACL senior year, and so his recruitment process looked a little bit different than mine.
Senior year of high school?
High school.
Okay.
Yeah, high school. And so, Coach Wilson at Georgia Tech, who Barry knew, he had FSU connections, obviously he...
Barry Smith has connections?
Barry's got a lot of connections.
You think? Think this show got rolling level it is now with all the guests, and I'm at a Ferg's.
I can only imagine.
I owe him reparations for the rest of my days on the planet.
Oh, boy. But, yeah, I'll never forget, Andrew called me and goes, hey, man, I'm walking on you at Georgia Tech. I'm like, you're kidding me. He goes, no, I'm walking on. I'm like, awesome.
Rock on, brother.
Now I know somebody, but... it was great, freshman year, it was great to have somebody there that you knew, and You're kind of going through everything, you know, with each other. So,
favorite club in Atlanta?
Oh, jeez. Barry put you up to this?
No, I just pulled out. I always like to ask unique questions.
Oh man, well, so our bar that we would go to is called Moondogs.
I like the name already.
In Buckhead, and so that
I've been to Buckhead. I can imagine.
That was a Georgia Tech football bar back in the day at Moondogs. So like where we went after we beat UGA or any other big game, we were at Moondogs, and the rest was history. So.
And Moondogs never 86'd you?
No.
They like that cash.
Oh, well. Yeah.
and like any other school, when the football team goes to Moondogs, so do the ladies, and so do the guys that want to be looked at as maybe I'm part of the team, and the chicks like them.
Well, you know, that was the one of the big negatives that like a lot of colleges would say against Georgia Tech is just like, oh, there's no girls there. But then like you're like, okay, you're in the city of Atlanta. You know, there's like, you know, five colleges in Atlanta.
Spin around, buddy.
Right, and like you know, more like look around, right. And so like, that was never an issue. And so like, you know, I think once like you know a prospective like student athlete gets on campus and they you know they do their visit to Atlanta, like okay, like all these other colleges like in these.
Shorty don't have to be enrolled. She ain't got to be a student.
Yeah, you know all these little farm towns across the country. Sorry, like I've been in Des Moines a few times, but you know, yeah.
Hey, we're 700,000 strong. The stakes 3.2. You only got 21 million
right,
here.
Yeah, I should have said Auburn or yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Hey, Stark Vegas. Or
funny personal story about the guys that want to hang out with the jocks. My son Benny, you're talking about Claiborne, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, my son, his teammate that got I think offensive player of the game against Georgia Tech in the Orange Bowl. He went over to see him. Benny was playing NAIA, and they won the national championship.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, and they had a nice high school run in the state of Iowa, won state championship. But Ben goes to hang out with another of his buddies, yeah. And they were pals since they were this big.
Right.
Well, Claiborne takes a liking to Benny, and he goes, yeah. Hang with me, dude.
Yeah.
He goes, you're going to have all kinds of fun tonight.
Yeah, you're having a great
Every
time,
place
right?
in Iowa City, they walked in. I'm sure. Ben's right there, and they're saying, what position did he play? Yeah. He said, Pops, yeah. I never lied. DB. Oh, cool, man. Hey, come on. And he said, I never paid for a drink. He said, women were hanging on me. He goes, here I am from Morningside College. He goes, but boy. I'm with Claiborne, right. And they're just an assumption.
Oh, man, it's a superstar effect. And
did you ever have any buddies that were hanger-oners?
No. I mean, not like that. I mean, it was just, you know, it's interesting because you see it. I mean, there's been a couple times where, you know, I've been with some of our, you know, NFL friends that made it big, and like we're in like a city like Vegas or something like that, and you know, you just see people like recognize them, and it's just like superstar effect. Like, I mean, I've seen girls just like, you know, backpedaling trying to take a picture, and then they, you know, fall over. You know, it's just like absolutely crazy. But
well, yeah, and you're 6'6", you're standing there, man. They might wonder what position you're playing.
Jeez, well, that's the thing. Like, you're a bigger guy, so they assume, well, he must be somebody. So I'm like, no, I'm a nobody, trust me, but
Well, they ain't not nobody. You've had a heck of a career.
But
I bet you thoroughly enjoy what your career is now because you've stayed in sports.
It is because I'm working in sports. I'm passionate about what you do. If you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Well, that's what I tell people, and that's, yeah. You know, I've been blessed for 20-some years.
So, you know, it's like I said, I didn't go pro on the field. But I went pro, you know, on the business side.
Well, and your body's not going to be beat up. And you're going to have a longer career.
Knock on wood, right?
So, yeah.
You need to be around the same guys you were around anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, it's amazing how many student athletes are, you know, still in college athletics, now in the athletic departments with student athlete services or external units within development or marketing or different, you know, administration. You run into them each day and you're able to connect really well. Because of that, so
you're a great inspiration for these young kids. You know, obviously, you played at the highest level and have some incredible success. But one of the messages that I give out to a lot of kids that weren't fortunate enough to be blessed with athleticism is, if they want to stay in sports, there's careers like what you currently are doing,
there are.
And they exist.
Yeah.
And there's communications. Right now, I'm putting together. I put together an intern program with Eckerd College. And they're going to start here sometime,
yeah.
You know, and I'll have the
yeah.
communications, and I'll have the wizards and social media and graphics and filming for our podcast upstairs. But there's all kinds of opportunity to stay in the world of sport.
Absolutely.
And you're a prime example, right?
Absolutely. You know, the biggest thing is everyone wants to work in sports, but not everybody's willing to start the bottom again. And that's really what
internships.
Yeah, and that's what you've got to do.
That's,
you know, I think I don't know what it is about this generation that, you know, but it's, you know, I still talk to a lot of kids and they're like, you know, coming out of college thinking that, hey, like, they should be making $100,000 starting off. And I'm saying, hey, like, if you want to, you got to decide what you want to do. You know, if you're passionate about working in sports, hey, you've got to get in. I don't care if it's, you know, being a custodian or, you know, being a team mascot. You've got to get in. And when you get into an organization, that's where you network and you build relationships. You ultimately get to where you want to be within that organization. And you've got to be open-minded. You've got to be able to relocate and be able to move because you're not going to just go in pro sports and college athletics up one, you know, totem pole.
Not all the opportunities are in one spot.
Exactly. You've got to be able to be like, you know, mobile and like be able to relocate for a, you know, promotion and another one. And so you've got to be able to move around. But if you want it and that's what you're passionate about doing, there's plenty of opportunity. You just got to be able to like devote time to doing it. Yeah.
I worked in the Cubs organization in AAA baseball and I hired all the interns.
Yeah.
And I use that same MO with my company back in the Midwest that built it on the backs of interns.
Yeah.
But I would tell, you know, I have an athlete come in occasionally from Iowa State and want to work for me. And I say, hey, AJ, take the trash out. They'd look at me.
Yeah.
And then I'd make a point to the other interns because they thought, well, he's going to kiss their butt because he's a jock. I'd say, AJ, take the trash out if you want to keep working here. Because I'm teaching them lessons.
Right.
And you go to work for the, I made him be Cubby Bear.
Oh, yeah.
These guys out there are cool cats. I go, hey, you're Cubby Bear Day. It's 100 degrees out there. And they're like, I'm not Cubby Bear. I go, see that door? I got 10 kids that want to be Cubby Bear right now.
I'm telling you, that's the thing. It's supply and demand. And everybody wants to work in sports. There's not a lot of jobs. Minor league sports, minor league baseball, you know, it's probably like the, I mean, you're a jack of all trades. You're doing everything.
Did it all.
I know.
Here I am, assistant GM and director of sales and ticketing.
And you're probably the mascot at one point, too.
Well, I almost had to one time.
I threw a couple innings while you were out. Yeah.
But that was never going to happen. But I remember many times. And school's still in session and early in the season.
Oh, yeah.
Handing out programs. I mean, you do it all. That's just the reality if you want to get to the next level.
Absolutely.
And there isn't one person working for the Rays, front office, or the Bucks that didn't go through that process. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. Everybody's done it. You know, it's kind of like you've got to do it. And so.
Well, AJ, you're the only Smith right now in my wheelhouse that I'm giving props to.
Oh, wow.
I got dogged by Andrew, dogged by Barry today. You're the man. You're coming down.
You know, that other side of the Smith tree can be a little flaky sometimes. So.
Well, you said that. I didn't. He's my unofficial.
Barry probably had a couple Bloody Marys at Pasadena.
He could have had him there.
Andrew's, you know, the future mayor of Tampa, so he's probably politicking somewhere, you know.
He's out kissing babies and shaking hands.
He's probably doing something, you know. Yeah, I think he took off Instagram and social media for Lent, but he'll be back on tomorrow with a damn April photo dump, and we'll find out what he was up to.
He got that from his dad, Barry.
Oh, boy. I'm
going to tell you what, though. I love that cat. He has been so good to me.
Oh, they're the best.
Without Barry Smith, I wouldn't have met Mark Ferguson.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have an office upstairs. And I could go on and on and on. NFL
well, I'm sure
alumni.
You know Coach, right?
Of course.
So Coach is my dad's fraternity brother.
Really?
I swear to God. So, yeah, we're a... You know, we come here all the time, so...
Well, they don't get any better than Coach.
So Rich and my dad, I mean, like, ask Coach about this.
We need to get him on.
We should get Coach on.
Well, he keeps dodging me, you know why?
He's, you know, he coached...
He loves the fish.
Coach William Floyd, you know...
Oh, he's a real deal.
Yeah, he is.
All right, gentlemen.
Yep.
Well, for Michael Lortz, Osceola Wrestling, Barry Smith, and AJ from the No Show, AJ for covering for the No Show...
Yep.
Joe Boudreau, Big Ed, and the Big O, thanks for listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. Wishing you and your families a very happy Easter. God bless you. God bless America. God bless Ukraine.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.